A pullback on a controversial ordinance just ahead. The HRO's most vocal supporter explains why. Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9. Catch the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show video on demand at tvjax.com. Just ahead, Tommy Hazzouri on the human rights ordinance and the road ahead as he takes your calls. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Also this morning, author Jarrett Conrad, plus Going Green celebrates the work of Groundwork Jacksonville, all of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, saying that retreat is better than defeat, the most prominent supporter of expanding equal protections to the city's LGBT community withdrew his bill on the topic last week. Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri says he wants a chance to work further with city attorneys to clarify exemptions, focus on the business side of the bill, and continue to educate the public about the matter. Hazzouri's bill would have put the matter of the HRO to an up or down vote on the city council, but it became apparent that it did not have the votes for passage. At the same time, Jacksonville City Councilman Bill Gulliford had another bill on the matter. He has also withdrawn his legislation. It would have put the matter to a public vote, a referendum. Councilman Gulliford will be on the program next week. Right now, Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri joins us in studio with more about his thinking on the human rights ordinance, and he takes your calls. Councilman, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. It's great being here.
Good to have you on the show. And what are your questions for Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri on this matter of the human rights ordinance? Give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us or weigh in on our Facebook page. So signs of trouble grew as you were trying to move ahead this city's anti-discrimination ordinance, it seemed. And is that what prompted your decision to withdraw the legislation?
Several things, Melissa. And I apologize to the audience. I've got a leftover cold, and I know I sound nasally, but hopefully I can get through this. You know, I could sense from some of the questions that the council persons were asking that they hadn't really, I don't want to say they didn't do their homework. They need to talk to some of the general counsel people, especially to Jason Gabriel, our general counsel, about some of the concerns that they have, whether it's dealing with the bathroom, which always is kind of a red herring every time this bill comes up anywhere, and as well as with the churches and the faith-based community, as well as the small businesses under 15, I think it's pretty much to the point on what it wants to do. It adds six words to our present law. That's the thing. We have a law right now, a human rights ordinance, that covers everybody but the LGBT community. And all we're wanting to do is include them, notwithstanding whatever their lifestyle is, just to be able to provide an opportunity for them to be accepted, to be able to apply for jobs, to be able to purchase a house, to be able to have public use of public accommodations. And that's not happening. And unless you're in their skin, and I'm not, but unless you are, it's pure and simple discrimination. And there's nothing less than that. I mean, that's what it is, and that's what we're having to deal with.
It's 549-2937 to join the show. Now, you said the issue of public restrooms tends to come up a lot when these types of ordinances are considered. It came up during several town hall meetings on this here in Jacksonville. Why do you call that a red herring?
Well, in Houston, that's what they made out after the Houston passed the law a few months ago. They had a referendum that rescinded it. They called it the bathroom bill. And it was nothing. I think the mayor of Houston would tell you that, you know, they kind of blinked when they brought up the bathroom, didn't think that was very serious, and ignored it. And they shouldn't have. People think that just because they're transgender, they're going to go into a restroom and attack somebody, men or women. And the case is not, that's not true. If you talk to our sheriff's office, if you've talked to sheriff's offices around the country, they'll tell you their problem is with the sexual predators, not with the transgenders. And besides that, transgenders have been going into restrooms forever, and you wouldn't know the difference. They're not there to do harm. They're there to use their facility. And that's what you're dealing with. But it's very difficult to convince someone that it's not really an issue, that it's just another parade of horrible that people want to utilize to try to keep the bill from passing.
Now, you've said you'll reintroduce this legislation at some point after working with city attorneys and working to educate the public about it. You also have said you'd like to make sure there are exemptions carved out for businesses and faith institutions. What would you say to those who objected to this measure, saying that they felt it would discriminate against their business or their religious institution?
I don't think that many of them really read the bill. The religious institutions, they were concerned about not being able to hire who they wanted to in their religious organization, churches, what have you. The bill specifically exempts churches from not being able to hire who they want to. That's given. That's a given, and it's right in the language. The same is true for small businesses. Those under 15, and that's who we're talking about, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, those people can hire who they want to as long as it's under 15. Now, after that, it applies to everybody. You've got to look around and see what Jacksonville looks like today with Florida Blue, with Publix, with Winn-Dixie, with Bank America, with Wachovia, with Beaver Street Fisheries, Mr. Frisch's operations, with a number of large businesses and small businesses all had their own anti-discrimination policies. And that's all we're asking to do. Now, the mayor's done some things to say that, look what I'm doing. I'm going to have an anti-discrimination policy. We're going to have let the all city employees, including LGBT employees, we're going to show that we're non-discriminatory. We're going to require all, there are 18,000 vendors, to require them to have an anti-discrimination policy. And that sounds great. But what my answer is, it really begs a question of, while I commend the mayor for doing that, what about the rest of Jacksonville? What about the rest of us? And I think that that's the problem. He wants to do it like each of the businesses are doing it, I suppose, but not like we need to do it as a city to show our commitment to one city, one Jacksonville, as he likes to proclaim.
The number to join the show to connect with City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri is 549-2937. Give us a call. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Now, you worked to make the business case for this. So did the Jacksonville Chamber in particular. The Jacksonville Business Journal reported this week that a Miami businessman, a developer, has put off his plans to expand into North Florida until this matter of the HRO is resolved. Do you feel that bolsters your case?
Absolutely. That's what the Chamber's been saying forever. And we just had, I got an email the other day. This lady was planning on doing some development in Jacksonville. She says she's not going to do anything until she sees that we have an anti-discrimination policy. But that's been generally one of the issues that the Chamber brings up. Let me tell you, our Visit Jacksonville operation, they'll tell you when they try to bring conventions here and they go to these professional conventions, they'll tell them that they're not going to go to a city that doesn't have an inclusive, an all-inclusive HRO. And we've lost a lot of businesses. Those that would come here, they won't tell you that they're not coming because you don't have that policy necessarily. They just won't show up. And they'll just say, well, we're going to look other places. And that's what the Chamber faces a lot of times. Yeah, we get some businesses. That's great. But we're hurting and getting other businesses, small and large, to come to our city.
Now, next week, we'll host one of your colleagues, Jacksonville City Councilman Bill Gulliford. He put forth another piece of legislation on this, saying that it should go to the public for an up or down vote. He had basically gone on the record saying he didn't see the need to expand these protections. Why not put this vote to the public?
He had a chance to do that in 2012. He was on the council. He voted against the bill. I'm not here to debate him here, but I wouldn't mind asking you, let's have a debate on this. And I'd be glad to debate Mr. Gulliford about the issue itself, not whether it's going to be a referendum or a straight-up vote, keeping in mind that no human rights issue has ever been voted on through a referendum. 850 years ago, the President Lincoln and when he did away with slavery, 100 years later, 1920, when we did away with, we allowed women the right to vote. 50 years later, the Civil Rights Act of 64, 65, and now 2016 in Jacksonville, still wrestling with it. It's difficult to ask the majority to vote for the minority. I dare say that I don't know if you'd still have slavery. I don't know if you'd still have blacks using colored and white and whites using colored and white bathrooms and water fountains. Women, I could not imagine them not having a right to vote today. But all of these things, and then the Civil Rights Bill that passed in 64, 65 under President Johnson, those weren't referendums. Those were direct orders. Same thing that the mayor is doing now with his own city employees. He's doing it through an executive order, or he calls it a department directive. So I think that I'd love to debate Bill on this. We never really get a chance to do that, but that would have been a good thing to do, so people can see once and for all where we stand and where the city really stands.
Well, maybe we can make that happen at some point. In the meantime, let's go to your calls right now for City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri, 549-2937. Mike in Ponte Vedra. Go ahead, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a son that is gay. He lives in Silicon Valley and works for a high-tech company. He's told me many times, he said, "Dad, I would never move back to the Jacksonville area as long as the human rights ordinance does not include LGBT, which kind of hurts you as a parent when you have a brilliant child who doesn't want to be back home. Secondly, if you really think about it, little city of Atlantic Beach and the city of St. Augustine have LGBT included in their human rights ordinance. And for us in the Jacksonville area, which is now the largest city in the United States, think of that, the largest city in the United States that does not have a human rights ordinance, it's a disgrace. And I think Mr. Hazzouri is correct that large companies are not going to come here if they really knew, and that was teed up. And I don't think the Chamber of Commerce, when they're trying to attract companies to Jacksonville, are saying we don't include LGBT. They kind of avoid bringing that up. If the companies that were coming here knew that, they wouldn't come. I'll take my question off the air.
That's Mike in Ponte Vedra.
Good point, Mike. You know, by the way, Charlotte just passed an all-inclusive human rights ordinance. Now, Charlotte, North Carolina, and they're already protesting, want to take it to the legislature.
Yeah, we're getting tweets about that. Charlotte passed an all-inclusive non-discrimination ordinance this week. They have a Democratic mayor, a Democratic majority council. We're getting tweets saying this. North Carolina's Republican governor would like to repeal this with legislation.
I don't get it. This is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. It's just like I tell people about potholes. They're not Democratic potholes or Republican potholes. It's what's right for your community. It's what you need to be doing to make Jacksonville right again. You know, we're frozen in time. We're in a gaslight era as far as this is concerned, and we need to start moving into the 21st century if we want to be the kind of leader that we expect to be as a major city in the United States. 250 cities today have an all-inclusive human rights ordinance. 33 of those cities, most of the major ones, all the major ones in Florida, all have it. Tampa passed one in 1993. Where are we? Why are we where we are? It doesn't make sense. And, you know, if you have a council person that you're close to, please call them. Tell them this bill's going to come back. I'm as passionate as ever about it.
When will you bring it back?
Probably in a couple of months. And once I feel like, and I don't know, I won't ever know whether it's going to pass or fail because of the Sunshine Law. You can't get commitments like that, and you can't ask for them. You know, we didn't have the majority. I could sense that. But I think that if they understood what this bill does and what it doesn't do, then they'll have a better clarification. If we need to rewrite it in even plainer English, we'll do that.
Dan in Riverside. Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just first wanted to thank Tommy Hazzouri for showing such leadership on this issue. I mean, you've all said it all morning about why it's so important to move this issue forward. You know, we are kind of the last holdout in Florida in terms of big cities to not have an inclusive human rights ordinance. And it's a real black eye for the city. So I want to first thank Tommy for doing that. And I want to say that, you know, I think it's so important for the community that's listening that they need to realize that they need to be engaged in this process.
Absolutely.
A lot of folks think that because they think it's inevitable or it's impossible or whatever they might be thinking, all I can do is say, for people who care about human rights, who care about the LGBT community, who care about Jacksonville and moving us forward into the 21st century, when this comes back up again, people need to be involved, and they need to show up to the city council, and they need to have conversations with their council members and tell them why it's so important. And that's really all I wanted to say, and I really wanted to thank Tommy Hazzouri.
Okay, thanks for that. Let me ask you as a follow-up, Councilman Hazzouri, there were quite a few meetings on this, both this year and back in 2012. There were town halls where people both pro and con had the opportunity to weigh in and really express their views, deeply held views, both pro and con on this issue. In the end, the votes weren't there. And so for those listening that did not feel that this ordinance should be expanded, what would you say to those who would argue with you and say, well, it's simply expressing the majority viewpoint of this community, which is still dominated to some degree by people of deep and evangelical religious faith that leads them to think that this ordinance is not right for this community?
You know, people say it's a special right, those who oppose it. It's not a special right. It's a human right that all of us deserve. You know, sometimes I feel like when we had those meetings, it was like a Salem witch trial, you know, and I wasn't there when that to experience that. But
you're not quite that old.
No, getting there. But no, and, you know, keep in mind that the other council, we're 11 new council since the 2012 council. There are a lot more conservatives, a lot more individuals who held fast to their beliefs. And I don't question their beliefs. I mean, that's their prerogative. I want them to have the facts, though. I think it's important and imperative that they know what the bill says. When I saw language that went out from some of the evangelicals around Jacksonville, clearly a mistake of what we intended and what it says in our ordinance. I think it has a real good chance. I'm going to fight for this, whether it's today, tomorrow, next year. This city has to have, this is important to me, is getting rid of those tolls and getting rid of the smell, doing the things as better Jacksonville that we had over the last several years. Why are we dead in the water when it comes to an issue that we want everyone to enjoy the same quality of life for ourselves and our families? And it just doesn't make sense. It's disheartening to me. One of the toughest decisions I had, Melissa, was withdrawing this bill. They were starting to play some games with it, withdrawing it. You didn't know who was going to pop up and try to do it. It's like a whack-a-mole. You didn't know what was going to go on. So I said, you know, I talked to Audrey Moran, who's chamber chair. She agreed with me. She's vehemently supportive of this. And we decided, let's just move forward, drop it now. We can reintroduce it, and hopefully it'll come back to the full committee of the whole, like where we left off. But better prepared, perhaps. Thought we were prepared, but hopefully better informed on the part of the council members. And so that's what we're going to do, and come hell or high water, this bill has got to pass if Jacksonville wants to pass itself on. And as a big city, as a city that makes sense, and you want to bring your children back to Jacksonville. I was talking to someone out in the hall a while ago. Their child lives in Chicago. They're probably never going to come back to Jacksonville. Many of them are like that. Until we have, especially for the young people, they want to live and work in an environment where everybody's accepted. Whether you're gay or not gay, just enjoy your life and treat others as you would have them treat you. And that's all this is about. And why people are so afraid, to me, it's not that complicated.
Lots of calls, emails, tweets, and Facebook comments as we break news on the show this morning. Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri saying that he will reintroduce his HRO legislation in a couple of months. Just a few of your many comments on Facebook. Robert writes, Jacksonville can no longer be considered the bold new city of the South, as our ignorance is giving us the reputation of being the biggest hick town in the South. Robert, however, writes, he, meaning you, Councilman Hazuri, should spend more time learning to control his ego and how to do the business needed to garner support for such legislation. I'll let you respond to that in a minute. And here's an email from Peter. Your proposed bill is not at all inclusive because it doesn't include small businesses. Why not include all businesses?
Because it doesn't include small businesses?
That's from Peter.
It does include small businesses, but those businesses under 15, as defined by the federal government, a small business, are excluded because it's very difficult for them to adhere to a law like this when they only have so many employees. Now, as far as the ego, maybe this guy, I don't know who he is, and I don't know where ego fits in. It's not something that it is a badge of honor, really, to support this kind of legislation. But, you know, I can do more than one thing. HRO is a big issue for me. A lot of other issues I've got coming forth are important to me. But as far as an ego, and I didn't understand the context of ego versus trying to make them better informed. This is not my bill, even though I'm the chief sponsor. Aaron Bowman, Councilman Bowman, Councilman Jim Love are all co-sponsors of the bill. And this, you know, the referendum really is a referendum on our city council, who we are as a city council, and how we speak as one city for one Jacksonville. And we need to display that leadership, and leadership right now is not there.
We appreciate you joining us, and
thank you.
We will continue to follow the issue. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
City Councilman Tommy Hazuri joining the show. Next week, we will discuss this same matter with City Councilman Bill Gulliford. Much more still ahead later. Going Green celebrates the work of Groundwork Jacksonville. But up next, it's American Heart Month. A look at gender and ethnic disparities in heart disease, what women need to know especially. That's back in a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2, sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Walter Robinson remembers what happened right after he published the biggest story of his career.
We had calls in just several weeks' time from more than 300 victims just in the Boston Archdiocese.
It was 2002, and the Boston Globe Spotlight team had just blown the lid off the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. Find out what happened next on this week's Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
We've talked a lot about the drug epidemic. Now it's time to talk about recovery.
I want this chapter of my life to close. Just end. And it's not happening fast enough.
Why treatment on demand is so needed and so hard to achieve. A story from West Baltimore, today on All Things Considered, from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, February is American Heart Month, and all this month on the show, we're speaking with local physicians about how to keep your heart healthy. And that goes for everyone, because it turns out there are significant gender and ethnic disparities in heart disease impacting our heart health. And it means that there can be symptoms sometimes that are very different for women than men, and also some ethnic groups. Here to educate us, we welcome Dr. Gladys Velarde, director of the Women's Cardiovascular Health Program at the University of Florida College of Medicine, Jacksonville. Dr. Velarde, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. And I'm so glad to talk with you about this because the symptoms of heart disease in women especially can be very different sometimes than what we tend to think of for the guys. That's one thing to start with, isn't it?
Absolutely. We've learned through the years of research that women can present with different of the classic symptoms, if you may, classic based on a male model.
And so all the studies, all the treatment options over the years have been based on how to treat a man having a heart attack. And it's only recently that that started to change, right?
Well, we have recent, it's correct that you say recent, but we've known this for quite some time. The problem is that this is linked to the lack of participation of women in cardiovascular trials. And so that has caused the lagging behind of evidence and understanding of the presentation of the disease in women.
So what do we now understand? How is it different? How is heart disease different for women?
Well, what makes it so fascinating, Melissa, is that we're not yet there. We're beginning to understand some of the differences in the manifestation of the disease at the level of the muscle, at the level of the artery, at the level of the lining of the artery, the coronary arteries. Those are the arteries that feed blood and oxygen to the heart muscle. The heart is a fascinating organ, so there are so many components to it, and we're just beginning to understand how those components interact in women and how sex and biology are intertwined. So it's just fascinating.
So if a woman is having symptoms of heart trouble, what should she be aware of? And how is it different from the classic symptoms most men report, like pain and tightness in the chest?
So what we're specifically, let me clarify it for the listeners, is that when we talk about symptoms of heart disease, we're specifically and mostly talking about coronary artery disease. There's much more to the heart than just the arteries. But since this is about 2 to 3/3 of the cardiovascular problems are coronary arteries, then that's when we talk about, you know, symptoms of heart disease. So the symptoms of angina or pain may be the squeezing sensation in the chest. That's the typical model. Mm-hmm. And women do get that. They do get those symptoms. But in addition, they get a multitude of layers of other symptoms that that associate more in women. So it's more difficult for the clinician to peel them.
To diagnose. What are some of those symptoms?
Tiredness, fatigue. They may experience that before they experience chest pain or angina, quote unquote.
Women get pain in their arm too?
Both can get. That's a distribution of the sensory fibers that classically will radiate to the left arm. That can have that happens on both genders, but women tend to present more with fatigue. The older women, more tired. Indigestion is common. Pain referred to the back, to the jaw,
and people could see that as being a lot of different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they have more symptoms, and so the complexity adds to the diagnosis.
Now, in addition to women and heart disease, there are ethnic disparities that you wanted to bring up too. What are those?
Well, what we see is that there are some ethnic groups in the United States. We are our nation is a collage of ethnicities and races, and we have disparities with the African American population. But for example, stroke hits them really hard, and that's a cardiovascular disease. It's they are significantly affected by stroke. There are more risk factors in minority populations, and therefore they are more prone and at a higher risk and experience an earlier death related to cardiovascular disease because of these risk factors. They are less aware of the risk factors that they should be aware of. And so there's a combination for disaster, if you will. And that's why morbidity and mortality is higher in some ethnic groups.
It is American Heart Month. All this month, we've been speaking to clinicians like you. And every time we do this, we bring out the tried and true advice that I know you give your patients. Monitor your heart health, but also try to be preventative about it. Eat right, exercise,
right.
Eat a good diet, don't smoke, all those things.
Right. Those are the basic seven that the American Heart Association has put forward with the hope that by year 2020, we will decrease cardiovascular death mortality by 20%. You know, there are some simple things people should know that when they have one risk factor, they should be asking their providers, do I have the other one? If you're hypertensive, am I diabetic? How's my sugar? If you are diabetic, what's my blood pressure? What's my waist circumference? You know, these are things that are not talked about that commonly, but those are, you know, the ones you mentioned, you know, inactivity, obesity, diabetes, high cholesterol, hypertension, cigarette smoking. Those are the clear-cut ones. But if you have one, ask your provider if you have another one. You have to be screened for the, because when they coexist, your risk increases significantly.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Dr. Gladys Velarde directs the Women's Cardiovascular Health Program at the UF College of Medicine, Jacksonville. Well, still ahead, Groundwork Jacksonville celebrates an important milestone. Also, author Jarrett Conrad on race relations and the human brain. That's next.
Create the number one sitcom on television, you'd think you can rest easy, yeah? No.
I'm constantly in a mild state of anxiety trying to get it right with a limited amount of time and a limited amount of intelligence.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Chuck Lorre, creator of The Big Bang Theory, on the occasion of its 200th episode, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration is presenting a plan to Congress for closing the Guantanamo Detention Center. The timeline, where the existing detainees would be transferred, and the challenges of getting support for the proposal.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Joe R. Lansdale is the award-winning author of the popular Happ and Leonard mysteries, the basis for a new series on the Sundance Channel. On the next Fresh Air, Lansdale tells us about growing up poor in Texas in the 50s and becoming a writer.
I wrote one short story every day for 90 days, and they were all awful.
He got better. His new book is Honky Tonk Samurai. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
It's when you're at your very worst, in the Europe fearful, alone, wearing a robe that doesn't even cover you fully. It's then that you may act in a manner that reveals who you really are. On the next Snap Judgment, we proudly present The Patient. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, perhaps no issue in America is more thorny and difficult than that of race. And so much of our problems with race relations come down to the human brain. At least that's the compelling argument presented by one local researcher. Award-winning author, entrepreneur, keynote speaker, and executive coach Jarrett Conrad explores these themes in his fascinating new book, The Fragile Mind. And he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So our minds are fragile, especially when it comes to these very deep-seated perceptions. That's the premise.
That's no doubt about it. I mean, we're as wonderful and as brilliant as the human mind is, you know, 100 billion brain cells. We're fascinating in that way. But we're vulnerable and fragile in some very predictable ways.
And you talk about this in your book. What are some predictable ways our mind works against us when we make snap judgments about other people or other or situations based that have a racial cast to them?
Yeah. So if you just don't think about race for a moment and think about stereotyping, you know, based on anything, stereotyping is really the brain's way of trying to process things in an efficient manner. We have 100 billion brain cells, but we get just overwhelmed with all the stimulus that is out there. So we have to have shortcuts.
Yeah.
And stereotyping is just a shortcut. We put things in boxes. If we do it with other things, we can do it with race.
In the movie Up in the Air, George Clooney tells his companion to get behind the Asian couple in the checkout line. He's like, I stereotype. It's faster. He says, oh, you'll go through the line much quicker if you get behind that Asian couple.
It's the brain's default mechanism to make sense of the world.
Okay, but how does that get us into trouble then?
Well, certainly, when you make stereotypes or you make judgments about widgets, that works, right? But people are so different, and people fall into many, many different categories. So even if we know some statistics about black people in general, that doesn't say anything about the next black person we meet, because that person not only falls into the category of black people, they fall into the category of maybe educated people or people from a different region. So there's too many categories, too many factors that a human being brings to the table. And so it makes stereotyping really a bad move for people, but it's a default mechanism. It doesn't make us good, bad. We just need to understand it and get in front of it.
And you also write that not only do white folks make these conscious and subconscious judgments and actions, but African Americans also make decisions that you argue often can perpetuate their subordinate status in this country.
Certainly. And a lot of what I talk about is mental health. And I think of mental health not just, you know, one end of the continuum where you're talking about diagnosable stuff, but I'm talking about stress and just your emotional health. And certainly, when you're under a lot of stress, what I call traumatic stress, that's persistent, that some people in our community face, under that kind of stress, you make some self-destructive decisions. We know that if you take it out of race again, we know that women who are sexually assaulted, many of them struggle and they have some issues with trauma and sometimes make self-destructive decisions. We know that soldiers who return from a war zone sometimes struggle with trauma and make decisions that on its face we don't understand. So we need to understand stress better and understand that stress is a part of mental health and we have to really focus on that.
After laying out all these insights about how our brain tricks us and works against us sometimes, you also have some ideas for how we can, A, you know, become aware of this, and B, try to push back against it. How do we do that, all of us?
Yeah, so it's experience. You kind of disrupt that brain's default mechanism once you have experiences. And so if I meet one person who is Muslim, for instance, I get an idea of what it means to be Muslim. If I meet one other person 2 years from now, I'm going to make that connection. Well, the truth is the only thing they might have in common is that they're Muslim. Mm. What if I knew 200 Muslims? I've tricked that brain's mechanism to put all Muslims in a box because I'll know that there's so much diversity within the Muslim community. We are still very segregated. I think the statistic in the book is something like 80% of whites live in communities that less than 5% of that population is African American. And so even if you're a good person, even if you're kind, even if you're well-meaning, if you don't have experiences, you rely on the brain's default mechanisms and it gets us into trouble.
So having those experiences basically comes down to getting out of your comfort zone, doesn't it? And trying to get to know people that are not like you.
Yeah. I mean, you led the segment saying how race is so thorny and difficult. For me, it's not. This is a fun thing to talk about because human behavior is fascinating. And people do want to talk about race. You know, well, people don't like to talk. That's not true. But they want to talk about it in an area or in an environment that they're comfortable, which usually means I'm going to talk about it with somebody that agrees with me, or I'm going to talk about it with somebody that's not going to attack me.
And so how do we create that climate where people can say how they really feel without feeling that they'll be attacked?
Yeah, I think education is key because I think we rely too much on how people feel. And so if I walk up and say, as an African-American, I feel this way, that is interesting and we should take that into account. But I need to look at some data that lets me know, well, what do millions of people feel? And I want to make decisions based on that. And so I think that we have to get them grounded in some data. For instance, people don't know that discrimination still occurs. In the book, I go through so many segments, so many aspects of quality of life and talk about mm-hmm. things that have happened over the last 3 to 5 years. People don't understand that. They don't know that hate group membership has increased. So they don't understand that stuff. So I think giving people a basis of factual information, and then let's talk about how we interpret these facts and how do you feel. You got to look at both.
There is a wealth of data in this book, and it's fascinating. You can get it online or at your bookstore. Get it now. It's called The Fragile Mind by local author Jarek Conrad. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Back in a moment.
This wasn't the first time that I was in completely over my head. I've counseled married couples on their sex life, and I've never had sex myself. I hear it's great.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live from the public radio exchange, PRX.org.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
This week on All Things Considered.
How are you feeling today?
I don't feel well. Spiritually, I'm depleted.
Fighting heroin addiction in Baltimore by changing perceptions.
It's quite easy to think of this as a character disorder. Well, the emerging science shows this is a brain disease.
Plus our coverage of Thursday's GOP debate and Saturday's Democratic primary in South Carolina. Listen every afternoon.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Radio Lab, how far can you push the human body before it breaks?
I was starting to have nightmares, but I was awake.
People seeing secret code in the cracks of the road. Riders jumping off their bikes to square off and fight mailboxes.
We'll bring you the story of one race.
It's a race that is designed to reveal what human limits are.
That's on the next Radio Lab.
Saturdays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
The most famous mailbox in Maryland.
Sometimes I look out my window and I see people taking selfies with the mailbox.
Is filled.
Every day but Sunday.
With secrets.
Wow. Dear Frank, my dad died in November, right before he died.
It's a very human condition. What do we conceal? What do we reveal?
I'm Guy Raz. Secrets, next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Sundays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
This Going Green segment is brought to you by the Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a unique partnership between the City of Jacksonville, the National Park Service, the EPA, and Groundwork USA. Groundwork Jacksonville is one of 22 trusts across the country, the only trust in Florida and the first in the Southeast. And it's the city's primary nonprofit specifically created to clean and redevelop Hogan's Creek and other public spaces, hoping to recreate that emerald necklace first championed by famed architect Henry Clutho in this city's early 20th century. Now on Monday night, Groundwork Jacksonville is going to celebrate its one-year anniversary and unveil some ambitious new plans. CEO Don Emmerich is here now to tell us about it. It's today's Going Green. Good morning.
Good morning.
And congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it went by really fast.
Yes, it did. It seemed like last week I was first hearing about this. So Groundwork Jacksonville, the first of its kind in Florida. Let's explain what it's all about.
Well, the concept certainly, it started in Europe 20-some years ago, Groundwork UK. The concept then came over here to the States. EPA and the National Park Service loved the model and brought it over here to the States. And, you know, 15 years later, there's 22 trusts, and we're one of them. And it's a huge get for the city. And that's what we've been really trying to get the public to understand, and certainly our elected officials as well, is that we're their private partner. You know, and so there's a lot of things that we can do in partnership with the municipality to bring in extra dollars, private dollars, to do some of this work that has been needed for a very long time.
And let's talk about the work that you're doing, in particular the cleanup of Hogan's Creek and revitalizing Springfield and the east side of Jacksonville. How will you go about doing that?
Sure. Well, let me clarify for a little bit. You know, certainly when we first came out of the box, you know, the idea of having a groundwork was definitely an idea to help be a catalyst to get private dollars for Hogan's Creek. But there's so many more. So that is, you know, that's an easy thing to grab a hold on. Hogan's Creek is definitely a part of our vision, but it's not the only thing that we're doing. The way that we are going to go, so the whole year, this past year has been about capacity building. So we're a startup. And so we really needed to take some time to get our vision together, to get our strategy together, but at the same time, do some short-term, high-impact projects so that the community can really see that we're about implementation. We are not a convener. We're not a planning organization. All of these plans that we've had on the shelves that the city has and some of these other planning organizations, we're ready to implement. Mm-hmm. And the community is ready to implement as well. So a lot of the work that we've been doing over the last year has really been kind of saying, well, what is it that we really need to do? What truly is the landscape of Jacksonville? And that is what we're going to reveal on Monday. It is more than Hogan's Creek. Hogan's Creek is there. But we have a greater vision for the waterways and the contaminated land in our city. And that's what we're going to be releasing on Monday is that vision.
Monday night, you'll be celebrating your first anniversary and then also unveiling your plans for the next year.
Yeah, it's very exciting. In fact, we always knew that this particular vision that we're going to release on Monday was kind of always there in the back of our head. But the landscape is, no pun intended, but the landscape and the environment, the business environment is really prime for us to expedite that a little quicker than we thought. And so after a year of doing some very, very strong vetting and talking to people in the communities, and quite frankly, now the communities are inviting us in, that's really, really important. You can't just go into some of these environmental justice communities and push your vision. You have to be invited in. And we worked this entire year to really develop those relationships. And we're so excited to have the community around us. And we're ready to get to work.
You want everyone to come out to this event. It's Monday, February 29th, 5:30 p.m. at the Warehouse. That's at 2301 North Main Street.
Which that in itself is a wonderful opportunity. This is the Warehouse District in Springfield, and we have some, you know, folks that are investing in that area and wanting to revitalize some of the warehouse area. That particular warehouse sits on the S Line, which is Jacksonville's only urban trail that connects seven of our urban communities. That warehouse is a catalyst for redevelopment, and so is the trail. So we're really excited to show off the S Line. The S Line's been around for 10 years, but it just hasn't really been showcased as a jewel.
What does it connect?
It starts in Newtown. It starts on Myrtle. It's an old CSX railway.
Okay.
That was paved over about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it starts in Newtown on Myrtle Avenue. It goes through Durkeyville, Brentwood, then Springfield, goes up to, it makes an S, and it goes up to North Shore and then all the way up to Gateway Mall.
Oh, all the way up there. Wow.
4.8-mile urban trail. It's beautiful. We do monthly rides to bring awareness to it. And I can't tell you how many people and even the residents around the S Line, two things that we get. Wow, I had no idea that Jacksonville had this. That's number one. Number two, the residents say to us, we're so glad to see people using this trail.
And as walking it, biking it.
You see kids using their skateboards, getting to some of the parks. It is a we talk about in this city about connecting neighborhoods. Well, let's remember that there's a lot of neighborhoods that we're not connecting, mm-hmm. and this trail does that. And that's why we're so passionate about this, is really working with some of those forgotten neighborhoods that are historic in their own right. And we can do that through green space and greenways.
That is really fascinating. I'm going to have to get out and walk it myself.
Come out with us.
Yes.
We do it monthly.
And come out Monday night to Groundwork Jacksonville's first anniversary party. It's Monday, February 29th, 5:30 p.m. at the Warehouse, 2301 North Main Street, as they let everyone know about their year in review and debut their new vision for the following year. CEO Don Emmerich in studio with us, and thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
That is our Going Green today, and that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show video on demand at our partner's website, tvjax.com. Well, next on Diane Rehm, the Obama administration presents a plan to Congress for closing the Guantanamo Detention Center. The timeline where the existing detainees would be transferred and the challenges of getting support for the idea. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.